That's right. We are on the road again, and we are here with Dan Stein. He is the president of FAIR, and he is part of what puts all this on, and through their graciousness of bringing together 60 radio broadcasters, the hugest, isn't it, show that you have ever put on. Even somebody from Hawaii is here this year. Dan Stein, it's my great pleasure to welcome you to the show. How's it going?
Couldn't be happier to see you. Thanks for being here. It's a great event.
It is a great event. And people, there's tweets going out everywhere. There's Facebook. There's posts. I just saw a picture of you on Talkers Magazine. And
with you.
Yeah, well, I was there too with Michael Harrison, yeah. So it is a topic that affects everybody. And even though we're not on the border in South Carolina, it affects us too.
Well, all over the country now, because there's a huge supply of people who want to work or who are desperate and who want to try to move. The United States, like most other countries that are wealthy, have this problem of trying to deter illegal migration, people coming across illegally. And for a while, it only affected certain states like Florida, Texas, California, Illinois. But now you're seeing it all across the country, and certainly in areas where there's job growth. People come illegally, they fill niches, you get a two-tier labor market. The problem is that normally what you'd have, for example, in South Carolina, if you're building an auto plant or you're doing major construction, in the old days, you know, a country doing its own work would recruit labor from other parts of the country.
Right.
And that labor, because it's here legally, has the leverage to bargain for good wages. Now what you have is this two-tier labor market where people who are in the trades or licensed or the managers will often be reasonably well paid, although not like they used to be. And then the people who do the day work labor or the less skilled labor are here illegally. They're paid maybe cash under the table. People who would do that work here legally, who are here legally, they're not going to say, I'm not going to work for free. I'd rather be on welfare than work for free, basically.
Well, that's another big problem too, isn't it?
Well, the market clearing wage is depressed by the availability of people here illegally. When you have a social entitlement structure and promote illegal immigration at the same time, you essentially create a class-based caste system. And so then Americans will go, well, I'm not going to do that kind of work because those guys are doing that work, and we're not going to, that's not my kind of, I don't do that kind of work. Why should I have to compete with people here illegally? And the employer goes to Congress and says, I can't get Americans to do this work for the wages and under the working conditions that I want to offer. And it's ultimately kind of a greed agenda, but it's produced the decline in the native-born labor force participation rate like we haven't seen in a long time. And that's a bad thing because they say we have low unemployment, but it doesn't take into account what they call the U6 rate of like discouraged workers who have just dropped out of the labor force. If you have a domestic labor market that is competing on a level playing field, there's a tightening. People move internally within the country. The Federal Reserve will tell you that the rate of internal mobility for Americans has plunged because they're not moving because if you're an unemployed firefighter in Dayton, Ohio, you can't relocate to Los Angeles and get a job as a firefighter. First of all, you have to speak Spanish in most of these bilingual societies. So really, immigration, a lot of it is ultimately about income redistribution. People at the top love it, because they think, wow, I'm getting all this labor and I'm not having to pay for it. But everybody else winds up paying for the labor subsidy in schools, hospitals, hotels, you know, roads,
sure,
and all this infrastructure. So it's one of the reasons why we've lost the American middle class, along with trade.
Well, I think that's very interesting because we have, when we talk about people with unemployment benefits, welfare benefits, all this type of stuff, we're not getting people off of that. And so if we continue to let people come in, we're not ever going to get away from it, are we, Dan?
Well, see, Donald Trump, who did something really quite historic, and frankly, since probably Teddy Roosevelt, no presidential candidate has really run on the immigration issue from this standpoint and won. And, of course, he'd never even been elected dog catcher, so it's quite a remarkable thing.
Yeah,
we have his promises page here, and people go on our website and see we're tracking all the promises, and how's he doing, and if he's not getting stuff done, well, who's the problem, what's the holdup? We tell people that and give them the tools to try to put some pressure on, but one of the promises is to cut overall immigration. Now,
are we supposed to cut immigration, or are we just supposed to enforce our laws?
Well, enforce our laws, but he also embraced the idea that we need to move immigration back to traditional levels.
What are traditional levels?
We're running a 19th century immigration program in the 21st century, except that we're running it at 4 or 5 times higher. The immigration levels we see today were only matched in a handful of years between 1890 and 1915. Throughout most of American history, we've had immigration levels of 300,000 a year or less. We filled this country up with far fewer people. Folks wonder why the traffic is so congested on 95 or in these major metropolitan areas. Our highway system designed in the 50s can't handle the traffic.
Sure.
The congestive effect in our infrastructure, schools, and what have you. People are coming at a rate that was far exceeding the projections. So...
Well, aren't we supposed to open our doors to the weary and those that don't have any other place to go?
Okay, we've got plenty of the world's wretched refugees right now, and what we need to start taking care of our own folks. We have our own refugees. So, yes, immigration can play an important and historic role in our country's future, but we can't continue to do this extraordinary thing of trying to accommodate over 1 million people a year, and then the multiplier effect after they get here is very significant. We could hit 1 billion people by the end of this century if we're not careful in the country. Obviously, it's having huge impacts on the demographics, changing ethnicity, and many other factors. But what it's also doing is destroying the American middle class, and they're winners and losers in the process. Donald Trump said, we need to bring it back down to historic levels. There's a bill in Congress called the RAISE Act. It's only in the Senate right now, but Senators Cotton and Perdue. It says we're going to eliminate family chain migration, bring the levels down, and increase the skill composition of the flow. In a post-industrial information superpower economy, you do not bring in immigrants more appropriate to the buggy whip economy. No education, illiterate in any language.
The what economy?
Buggy whips.
Buggy whips? Okay.
I mean, this is a different age. So we have to readjust our thinking and recognize that when you have this social entitlement structure, just the value added, if you bring somebody in from, say, Haiti, just the value of a public education is worth about 25 times the annual income over time. Just
sure.
The value of a public education.
Yes.
So you really do, for an immigrant to actually have a positive federal tax liability and not cost the taxpayer, they have to have good, strong technical training, maybe postgraduate education, some unique proprietary knowledge skills to attract capital. And then you have to be careful you're not draining the brains of people coming from countries that need that capital, too. So, I mean, I got into this thing a very long time ago because I realized that the immigration issue is not as simple as people say it is. But the reason people engage in name-calling, which you hear a lot of, mm-hmm. on the left. I mean, a writer once said, on the left they have their cheap cause, and on the business community they have their cheap labor. And the little guy in the middle is going, what's going on? I mean, I like the idea of immigration, but it shouldn't be overwhelming what we're trying to do as a people, and it should serve our interests as a nation.
Well, the other night you were back on Fox, and you were talking about this 5-year program where immigrants could not get welfare. Correct?
Well, yes, but the thing is, it's already the law. I mean, at some level, Congress tried.
A law?
H.R. 4.
Okay.
1994, Clay Shaw, remember he was the head of the Ways and Means Committee.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans took the House for the first time in my lifetime after Prop 187 passed in California. Very exciting. They introduced a bill to ban immigrants from getting means-tested cash federal assistance.
Mm-hmm.
5 years. It passed. Bill Clinton, who did understand where the center of the issue was, signed it. Now, there's a lot of loopholes, and it's been kind of beaten down. And there's something called the public charge bar that says if you don't have the money, if you don't have the income-earning ability, somebody's going to have to vouch for you, and that's called the sponsorship pledge. And basically, you're going to have to pay Mr. Sponsor if your alien relative or what have you employee winds up on the dole. Again, not enforced at all. Now, this underscores the idea that this buggy whip immigration stream is out of touch with the modern world. It is way too expensive to run a low-skill, unskilled immigration program in a post-industrial information economy like we have today. And information earning power has declined because of the internet. So all these young people today are trying to go into a labor market where we as a nation don't have an actual plan for how young people are supposed to like earn their way up the way our grandparents did at Union Carbide or places like that. We're really leaving the poor millennials in a ditch. right? Because they got this massive college debt, major national debt, massive immigration, competing in the same labor market, and like no obvious path forward for them economically. No wonder they're failing to launch and spending so much time living in their parents' basement because they can't see the path forward. There's we're good people when we talk about immigration control, because in the end we're talking about our primary obligation. Sure, we'd love to help people all over the world. And wouldn't it be great if anybody could go anywhere in the world?
Sure.
Perfect world. I'd love a perfect world. It'd be a little boring. But we have our obligation to our grandchildren, children, and people here first. We have our own refugees. So let's get our priorities straight and realize there's no such thing as an easy solution in the immigration issue. But first, we have to make sure all immigrants are legal, that if you don't play by the rule, you don't play the game. That we want to select people based on what you know, not just who you know, not nepotism. And that we want to finally implement the strategies that we know work to deter illegal immigration that have not been implemented but for the pressure of the radical left that wants to help the Democrats move the electorate to the left, and the cheap labor wing of the Republican Party, the financial industry, and Chamber of Commerce.
I am glad we had this time together to talk about this. You have just put it all together in quite a spin there, Dan Stein. I tell you what.
I never spin. I simply inform.
Well, but to really, for people, one of the questions we had on our Facebook page was, what about the refugees? Not just, I presume when you're talking about our refugees, are you talking about our American people right here in our country?
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to import criminals and things like that. We grow them just fine here. But yes, a tight labor market is a great boon to young people in spurring their own entrepreneurship and innovation.
Well, I understand
they need to
that.
See things being made, manufactured. They need to see how we became a great industrial power. If nothing's being made here and people are sitting around wondering, you know, and you can't learn the labor skills associated with those entry-level jobs because now they're all going to foreign-born, where do our young people learn the ethics of work? Right, the lessons of self-discipline.
WCRS Radio, Sharp Facets, My Business.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The small businesses that
small
we're lacking.
Small business is what it's all about. But, again, we started talking about this stratified labor market, which means that young people are told by their parents, you don't work in McDonald's anymore. There's no local factory to work in anymore. If they do, they're all here from other countries. They don't speak English. So you can go to summer camp and dilly around until you get a college degree, and maybe then you'll stay. Most of my younger daughter's friends, are they ever going to get out of school? I mean, my daughter's working. I taught her work. But most of them, I'm like, what are they, postgraduate 3 degrees? I mean, what are they doing? I mean, it's even getting to the point where some of the foreign students stay in school forever.
They do.
As long as someone will carry them along or they can run up the debt. But anyhow, I don't want to overgeneralize, but there is a process by which your young people learn and mirror and emulate. If they never see that in action, if it's socially unacceptable to them to actually go out and do this sort of labor, well, you get what you ask for.
You do. And I don't know if you saw this or not today on the news, but Walmart was having this big fair of all products made here in the United States and people that wanted to be carried by Walmart. And they actually had thousands of businesses there. You had to get a ticket to be able to go to this as a small business person. And they were talking about the number of products that were actually made here in the United States and the entrepreneur. And a few weeks ago, I heard that we've got more young people, millennials, going into business for themselves, which I find totally amazing that they would actually go into business for themselves. But as part of it is that frustration of not being able to find the job.
Well, and also, I mean, Walmart, Sam Walton did try way back in the 80s, the Buy America program at Walmart, but everybody said, no, price is
cheap,
great.
Cheap.
They didn't know that low prices also meant low wages, and they didn't grasp the economic business plan of Walmart at the time. Well, today, many young people are moving toward crafts, and part of why they like vinyl now and these other throwbacks is because there's a sort of a hearkening back to, like, make it here and having some ownership. Etsy is stimulating interest in selling crafts.
We sell on Etsy.
So there's all manner of reasons why people would kind of, young people would start to migrate to the idea, okay, maybe I'm not selling a lot of units now, but I did it, and me and my colleagues, and we created something. It's not mass-produced in some factory in China, but it's special, and it's here. And that market can actually be self-created within the millennials. They're a big enough demographic to do that. So it's partly a response to that. Millennials are a very bright, intelligent group of people who have access to information that I could never have dreamed of as a young person. And they can do great things, but we have to give them a level playing field and a chance.
Absolutely. Well, you know, you talk about the things that we didn't have when we were growing up, the smartphone, the iPhone. 10 years this week it has been in existence. And talk about a game changer throughout the world.
Well, it has been. I mean, there are great benefits. I'm always impressed by our young people. We have an intern here. I sometimes bring her along on my interviews because, you know, it's very encouraging when you talk individually to young people about what's going on. And when they're given the opportunity and can get around the social bullying and herd mentality that's being pushed on social media.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Internet itself, the original Sergey Brin, Larry Page idea was that it was a free market of ideas and you could get the wisdom of the last 5,000 years. So that search engine idea.
Right.
Now, the social media is about the wisdom of the last 5,000 years means less than the opinion of your three best friends.
Exactly. I agree with that.
And so, you know, young people are herded into this social clique, and this is how you have to think. Anybody who watched social media after the election and saw the Hillary supporters' behavior online.
The snowflakes.
Well, they sound like they're ready to pull out a knife and kill anybody who doesn't agree with them. But bringing some, I think young people would like to see a return to some civility because it's scary to see how social media is not the Internet. They're very different things. And the principles of free market of the First Amendment are achieved through access to information. Not cyberbullying or telling you what to think. It's an extension of what's happened in our universities. Anyway, the point is, when you can get millennials off and into a realm where they're able to like be free of this kind of the enemies of intellectual freedom,
sure.
They're actually very engaged and very with it and kind of figure it out.
Well. How do you think, I'm going to change this topic totally now, how do you think Donald Trump is doing, President Trump?
Well, I think he's doing, when you consider how he has this so-called mainstream press not only, you know, attacking
the social media bullies.
Yeah, but also the unfair nature of how they're approaching it. I mean, he made them all look like fools, proved them wrong, made the professional punditry look as silly as they are, made them recognize they were kind of irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
And because they have a certain degree of bias, because they knew how they thought for sure Hillary was going to win, because they can't accept the reality that Trump won, but also because Trump was such good numbers, so good for ratings, they put him on all the time. And then they feel this guilt, this culpability in helping create this guy.
Right.
And so now they feel, because their bias is so overweening, they can't see the nature of how their bias is affecting their reporting, but they're in the course of trying to destroy him. They're actually reinforcing, they're destroying themselves and, frankly, the whole field of journalism at the same time while they're empowering what he represents. The big question with Trump is Trump needs to fulfill his promises. Trump needs our help to make sure that Republicans in Congress and some Democrats, but mostly Republicans, support what he's trying to do. I wish Democrats would support what he's trying to do, but, you know, it only takes a lot of pressure. But in the end, the big question is, will Trump have coattails or will the Bush Wall Street wing of the Republican Party simply wait him out and then go back to the Jeb Bush illegal immigration as an act of love, you know, which is what they really want to do because that's where lobbyists who are stuffing all this money in their pockets expect them to be. That's why, and that's Paul Ryan, and that's why nothing gets done.
Greed and power are powerful elixirs. But can you actually drain the swamp? Can you change the culture here in Washington, D.C.? You live here. You live here, yes?
I was born here. I'm a native Washingtonian.
Okay. So can they actually, do you think, drain the swamp?
Well, see, this is where the Internet, not social media so much, but the Internet and the age of information has been a game changer on issues like immigration. Fair has discovered that because the issue is asymmetrical, all the power curve is on the other side, but what the equalizer is the national consensus at the grassroots. What Fair tries to do is inform that activism with expertise and give people the tools in order to really get in the face of these members and say, look, we're not going to be flim-flam with pseudo and phony solutions. All this subtlety of the elites is not, you know, these latte-licking lefties who think that they, you know, people like Zuckerberg who think that they can live behind these big walls, you know, and tell the rest of us that, you know, we have to compete with all this cheap labor. People don't accept that anymore. And Donald Trump is emblematic of a seismic shift in the American political scene that isn't going to go away. The Republican Party has essentially a crisis internally. Trump has put it off.
I agree. They do. Yes.
Put it off about what they want to be. And either they're going to become Democrat light and try to compete in California, arguing low taxes and hoping occasionally they get lucky.
Mm-hmm.
It's like flipping a coin. I mean, how do we get Governor Hogan in Maryland, where I live? Okay, occasionally the Democrats run somebody who's so terrible or implodes in the trail. Then they get elected. That's the model. It's the California model versus the Arizona model.
Okay.
I mean, you all send us Lindsey Graham.
I know.
But that's a byproduct of a gamed primary system and the fact that he's the guy standing and because he's a Republican, he gets elected. I mean, the rest of us get all that. There are sort of ways in which certain kinds of people get elected in our political system, depending on the system involved. And I'm not sure where I was going with that, except to say that the accountability, Jeb Bush, John McCain, and to some extent Romney, but learned the hard way that if you go the wrong way on the immigration issue at this point, it's a career destroyer. Do you really think that that a guy like Lindsey Graham is going to win on the immigration with his positions on the immigration issue?
No, and there's a lot of people. It's very questionable whether he'll come back again the next time. It's not till 2020 when he's up for re-election.
Yeah, well, he and John can get adjoining retirement condos on the golf course.
Yes, they could. Exactly.
And talk to each other.
Yep. But so you believe that there is change coming on this, but my question was, can the swamp be drained? Can government change? Or do we just need to move Washington, D.C. to a different place?
Well, see, the reason Trump has, the ace that Trump has in his pocket is that if he appears to not be succeeding because of this deep state, the stonewall of opposition, it simply validates in the minds of his supporters what they've been saying all along.
Sure.
And there's an awful lot of people who think Trump's success is an indicator of whether the whole system can be saved or whether it needs to be rewritten root and branch top to bottom. Power corrupts. We only have 536 members of Congress, including Pence, in the Senate. And so when so much money is pouring into the system, $30 million to run a House race, a job that pays, what, $150,000, $60,000, I mean, what's going on?
Right.
At some point you begin to realize we all have great respect for the founding fathers, the framers, but they couldn't foresee a country as big as this one is, and we're trying to fit this archaic system. What we need to do is expand the representation in the House, smaller districts, have them work, many of them remotely through computers, still have the Congress, but let them do a lot of their work remotely on computers, and that way maybe have one representative for every 10,000 people. So everybody can interact with their own member of Congress. Change the rules of the Senate to make it more responsive and actually work. And obviously you have to see some dissolving of the power at the federal level. The big question is, you see all these attacks on Trump coming from within the intelligence community. Most Americans ought to be creeped out by the way this whole thing has gone down, where Obama knew about the... I mean, we're getting far afield here. It's all manner of evidence.
Isn't it, though?
That there's corruption at every level of the system, right?
Yes. There is.
You know.
So that's what I'm saying. So can you actually drain the swamp? Are you going to get the laws of immigration enforced? Just take that.
The American people are demanding change, and they want to see change.
But
social media and the internet are enabling us to galvanize change. Talk radio helped create the grassroots mobilization that produced Donald Trump and the phenomenon itself. All you have to do is look at history to see that the mobilization possibilities of social media, under the right circumstances, could produce a mob outside the White House and the Capitol that could easily lead to some kind of violent overthrow of the United States. I'm not advocating that.
I hope
but people need to understand that when people become so dissatisfied with their system of government and believe that it is so corrupt that it's not listening to the voters, that the fix is always in, no matter what you do, the little guy always winds up on the wrong end of the stick. You radicalize the population sooner or later. These debts are going to have to be paid. Somebody's going to have to pay the price. Neither party seems to want to make the tough decisions to do it, but the consequences will eventually be visited upon our heads or our children's heads, and there will be consequences. It is important to understand that the mobilization of instant mobilization of social media has measureless and portentous implications for mobilizing crowds to threaten our institutions of government. And it's only a matter of time before those things happen if one segment or another of the population becomes sufficiently dissatisfied. Immigration touches on all the issues that people care about. Reasonable people can and should be dealing with this now before it winds up being thrown to the unreasonable people in the streets.
Wow.
Corruption does not persist forever.
It doesn't?
No.
No?
Eventually it gets overthrown.
Okay.
Eventually, more corruption comes in afterward.
Right.
People find themselves disappointed by snake oil salesmen and demigods. But Madison, in Federalist One, Alexander Hamilton, he warns of this exact same thing. Politicians overpromising benefits. Look at Obamacare. But 8 years ago, we got it. Now it's you can't take it away. It hasn't been there that long. These are uncontrollable entitlement structures that are we're taking money from our future generations, and nobody is prepared to lead and deal with the consequences. The swamp is a byproduct. I mean, people get the government they deserve, and what we want it fair. Obviously not a revolution. What we would like is meaningful citizen engagement and an ability to hold people accountable in an area where the citizens are defenseless without information. And that's why your show is so important and bringing me to the conclusion of my interview, why you being here is so critical to this country's future. Thank you for coming.
Well, thank you for coming, and I wanted to give you something here today. I had for you your own, because I think you deserve it, your own First Amendment Freedom of the Press t-shirt.
I really appreciate that.
And on the back, it lists out all our other First Amendments. So how about that?
I think that's fabulous. Maybe we ought to send this up to some members of the Supreme Court.
Maybe
so
we should.
Maybe they know for sure exactly what this says.
Exactly.
There's some rereading, okay?
There you go. Thank you so
really
much, Dan Stein. Thank you so much. All right. All right. This is WCRS. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Gold. Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
All right. Well, we are here right here, WCRS. I hope everybody enjoyed that pumped-up interview we just had with Dan Stein, the president of FAIR. We are now here with the ranchers. That's right. The ranchers, Joe Beth and John Ladd, are here with us. Some of our favorites. We always have them on every year. And part of the reason I think that FAIR is very smart in bringing in our ranchers is because they can tell us, and that's one of the reasons I love talking to y'all, exactly what's going on down at the border. So, John, how are things down there on the border? President Trump, last year when we were talking, I remember you saying that you hoped that we'd get a change and Trump would get in. Well, he got in. Has it had an effect?
It has a monumental effect. With very few people coming since November.
Since November?
And as soon as he got elected, it didn't have to get into office. He just got elected, and it pretty well stopped. We're still having the drugs. That's a different issue.
Right.
But as far as people goes, it's a great improvement.
Well, I'm curious because the thing that I had heard that there had been a dip, we talked to one of the Border Patrol this morning, and he said there was a dip, but now it's starting to move back up. You haven't seen that in your area?
I haven't seen that. Every area on the border is a little different, but
right.
The drugs haven't that hadn't changed at all with the Trump election, but the people sure has.
Okay, so there's two types of border of people coming across the border. Those that are just people coming across trying to get into this country, and then there's the drugs. But you're saying that those people, the people just trying to get here to our country, are not coming through your part. Now, where exactly is your ranch?
We're about 100 miles southeast of Tucson.
Okay.
And we're in the southeast corner with Arizona, New Mexico, and Mexico.
Okay.
We're about 60 miles from the New Mexico line.
60 miles.
And we're, our south fence is the border with Mexico.
Okay, and you are a fourth generation that's been in your family all this time.
Right, 121 years.
That's a long time.
Yeah, I hadn't been there the whole time.
I was going to say you've been holding up awful well, John.
That clean living.
Clean living down there. Well, Jo Beth, how do you feel about things since President Trump has been elected?
Better. I think he's just... talking about it, the way he talks about it, has been a great help.
Now, just for the record, you have a fence, and I know that you've repaired the fence, they've cut the fence, you've come through the fence. If the border wall, or let's say, when the border wall is built, will they build the border wall right there on the property line?
We have a border wall already.
You have one. Okay. But they still cut the wall and this type of thing, correct?
Yes, they cut the... steel mesh part they have cut, but they have built 2.5 miles, I think, of a new type of fence, and that fence they will have a really difficult time getting through, cutting. So, but that is the new style. But that's only 2.5 miles, I think.
Two and a half,
yeah.
2.5 miles.
So,
now, did Jesse Waters come down to your property?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So Jesse Waters was down on the border with you. I remember Jesse. I think, didn't he climb up on a ladder and look over or something?
He climbed up on one of the existing walls. He said, "Hey, Mexico, Donald Trump wants you to pay for this. What do you think?" He didn't get a response.
He didn't get a response. No. Nobody answered him.
No.
So as far as that 2.5 miles, that's not very long, though, is it?
No.
No. But my understanding is we would not be building the wall all the way because certain areas that would just be the natural borders mean
right.
that nobody will come through. But how much of your land would be covered by a new wall, if you will?
All of it could be.
All of it? But how many miles?
That's
is that?
10.5
10
miles.
And a half. Right.
And that's a third of the NACO Border Patrol's area is our ranch. So that would be a pretty big step if they could do that.
Now, I've heard about solar panels going on the wall. Is that a possibility?
Well, it's a good idea, but they're going to have to do a lot of maintenance on repairing broken solar panels if that's what they're really going to do.
The question is, will they put the solar panels on both sides or just on one side? Just out of
curiosity. They'd have to put it on the south side to get the sun.
So that would be the Mexican side.
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
So I think I might go, if they do the solar panels, I might have a repair business for solar panels.
Okay. Well, you know, one of the things that we have talked about is, of course, the people just coming across. Now, just coming across, Border Patrol people not doing anything. Has any of that changed?
Yes, that's changed. It isn't 100%,
mm-hmm.
but there's a big difference of what they're apprehending and detaining with the Trump administration versus the Obama. We had instances that Border Patrol wouldn't even get out of their truck.
Right.
In the Obama administration. Now, we're back into trying to catch people now with the Border Patrol.
Now, do you talk to Border Patrol people?
Every day.
Every day. How do they feel? How is their feeling about where things are going? The fact that they're getting out of their trucks, the fact that they're doing something. Are they on board with this?
Most of them are. They're, you know, the surprising thing with Border Patrol is it's a cross-section of American society, and you got good ones and bad ones and mediocre ones. And the bad ones aren't going to change no matter who's in office, but the good ones and mediocre ones are pretty much on board with they feel validated now that somebody in the administration appreciates them.
And I understand that you actually met with President Trump. Did you
no,
go?
We
or
didn't.
No, you went with, who did you meet with? You met with somebody in the Trump administration. I'm sorry.
Well, we've met Jeff Sessions, Mad Dog Mattis, General Kelly.
How was it to meet Mad Dog Mattis?
I'm ready to join the Marines and go to war.
He is that type of guy, isn't
Boy,
he?
Boy, I like him.
You like him?
We met Rick Perry, and anyway, and Ben Carson's came down, and they're quality people. I'm really impressed with them.
How about you, Joe Beth? What do you think?
Oh, I haven't met any of them. But
oh,
yeah,
okay.
Okay. They seem like really good people.
Now, if I remember correctly, educating those across the border, did we talk about it with y'all? Do you have school kids from the other side of the border coming through? Am I right on that?
In our Naco, Arizona, and then Naco, Sonora, kids, every day just walk across and go to school there.
Are they still doing that?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we still got them going to school. Now they walk back across and go home?
Yep.
But that's still an expense that our people are...
Yes, because they don't, you need to be a resident. You don't have to be a citizen,
right,
to go to school, but you have to be a resident paying taxes to that school district.
Right.
And they are not.
How many students are there, roughly, would you say?
Oh, Naco School is very small. It's K through 8. I don't know how many.
There's 175,
And
it's about 60% are not residents.
60% are not residents. Okay.
That's been a big political hotbed down there because a lot of the kids that don't live in the States are Americans. They're anchor babies, but they live in Mexico. So people confuse the fact that...
Wait a minute. They're anchor babies, but they live in Mexico.
Right.
So they're U.S. citizens.
Right. Yep. Their parents came over, had them. So
got their citizenship, yeah.
And then they took them back across the line to Mexico to live.
So they think that validates... Well, they're American citizens. Well, no, that doesn't matter. You have to be a resident.
Right.
That's what matters.
Right.
And we can't get past that because, the humanitarian.
When you register at a school, you're supposed to show proof of residency, like an electric bill.
Exactly.
I don't know, your mortgage or whatever.
Your rental receipt or something.
And they use aunts, uncles, cousins, grandma, grandpa,
whoever
they find
living
a relative and use that.
But they're not living
show.
There and they're
right,
not paying taxes or anything
right.
else.
Or tuition. You can come to school in the States if you pay tuition, and they're not doing that either.
So that's a huge issue. Now, has anybody looking at addressing that?
Well, there's been two or three attempts, and several years ago, the superintendent of the school brought it up, and she's no longer the superintendent of that school. And
what happened to her?
She was asked to leave.
Okay. And I wondered if they walked her out in the desert.
No. She's...
No. The possibility
that
maybe.
Drastic.
Well, you're talking about the Wild West out there
right.
now. Well, John's got his cowboy hat on here today, and he's got his boots on, I'm pretty sure. I haven't seen him, but I'm pretty sure he's got his boots on. Yeah.
They're my good ones.
They're your good ones? You wore your good ones here in town, huh?
Yep.
Okay.
But that whole area, in our area, it's the high school's got 400 kids in it in Bisbee, and predominantly Hispanic, same situation. Hospitals have suffered. There's no baby doctors in Bisbee anymore because of the insurance involved in mourning anchor babies.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone out of business. We have one place in Sierra Vista that you can still have a baby there. But the schools, the hospital, and the communities have suffered because of the amount of people that aren't paying taxes into the system. And nobody seems to care about that.
Well, I think that's a huge issue. I mean, you know, it's a huge issue, and it's one that should be addressed. Now, last year when you were on, you had a congresswoman that was going to, that you thought would do good things.
Martha McSally.
Yes. She has. She's excellent.
Okay.
She's lived up to our expectations. She's the chairwoman for the Homeland Security Committee in the House.
Mm-hmm.
Been fighting to save the A-10, the Warthog.
Right.
She was a pilot, an mm-hmm. Air Force pilot. So far, she's kept it flying. And then she brought a delegation down to the ranch from that Homeland Security Committee. And that's the first delegation from Washington that's been down there.
What did they find? What was the outcome of it? They wanted to go home.
I think some of them did, but
yeah.
they made a flight from Washington to the San Diego border,
mm-hmm.
then came to our border, and then went to Texas.
Right.
And that was still when the juvenile kids, the unaccompanied juveniles, were coming.
Right.
But when they got to our ranch, they had no idea that there was a steel structure at the border. Well, that's a wall. It's been there since 2006.
Right.
Oh, my God. And then, well, where's Mexico from here? And I said, well, that's on the other side of that fence. So that we had quite the education. Yeah.
Yes.
But
what did they leave with, do you think, John?
Well, they passed 3 bills, and I think 9 of them, 9 bills came out of the House, and 3 of them passed completely.
Okay.
So, and I think that's a pretty good percentage of, you know, in a one session that happened. And most of it was prosecuting the scouts.
The ones that come and scout.
And they're sitting up on mountaintops. And before that, they were just, if they were apprehended, they were just looked at as an illegal. But
right.
Now there's consequences for aiding and abetting incoming threats. So there are more severe penalties over that deal. Michael McCall was with them, and he's out of Texas. And we were really impressed with him. And he's military background. And
mm-hmm.
I think they got a sense that this is a problem. And
well, by cracky, I'm glad to hear this, John. Because, you know, you guys have been talking about it for a long time
right.
and doing everything that you can to
right.
bring that attention. And,
yeah.
you know, of course, being here at FAIR is a great way to get that
oh,
message
absolutely.
Out, too.
Yeah, this is still the best voice that we have, what you guys are doing.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just honored to be invited back every year. And you know, I was a little worried because it's better, but I'll tell you it's better, and I'll tell you when it's worse. But right now, we've got a lot of optimism that it's gonna. It isn't gonna happen overnight either, but it's sure better than it's been.
Now, as far as the drugs coming, as far as the drug part coming across, of course they come across there, and then it goes throughout the country.
Right.
And that's some of the biggest problems. Has Homeland Security or have any of these or your Border Patrols turning them back, detaining them, getting the drugs? I mean, is anything happening on that end?
Well, the Border Patrol's doing better catching the drugs. They're probably catching 30%.
Mm-hmm.
But our sheriff is got a program. It's a saber team, and it's a group of 6 guys that they specialize in drugs at the border. And
a saber team, they go out with sabers?
Well, no. They have
no,
guns.
They just use the Zorro mark on the drugs, and it goes melting into the ground here. Yeah.
That,
okay,
well,
sorry.
That could be. But,
no.
But that, in along with that program, the county attorney is prosecuting everything that they're catching. And the Border Patrol has a hard time with the federal attorneys. You have to have proof with the bundles on their back.
Mm-hmm.
And typically when they're going to get caught, they drop the bundle and say, I'm just an illegal. I don't know where that came from. And our sheriff department and county is saying, we got you. And so they're prosecuting them. And they're also prosecuting juveniles as adults. And that's made a big difference. They're getting a mandatory 2-year sentence.
And what happens, though, when they get out of jail?
Well, I think they go right back to smuggling. That's a profession.
That's one of our big problems, too,
yeah.
Isn't it, Joe Beth? The illegals, they you know, they're sent back after they've done their sentence. Well, a lot of them hadn't done a sentence. They were just deported.
Right.
But they still come right back across.
Yes.
That's right.
And, of course, that's why we've had so many deaths by illegals that just don't give a damn.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and the other, in our area, it's not illegal smuggling drugs. It's professionals. We're on the third generation. It's a family deal. And that you're right. When you get out of jail, you're going to go right back to what you know how to do.
Sure.
And Mexico hasn't helped any. There, a little bit of cross-border intelligence, but nobody trusts anybody, which I agree with. I wouldn't trust anybody in Mexico. But that we have a new program with the Border Patrol and their intelligence gathering and sharing. But in general, it's just it's a society, and that's what they know. And apparently, we're using enough drugs that it makes it lucrative, and here we are.
Well, I think it's very interesting. We want the. I mean, it's kind of like. I'll kind of liken it to Obamacare. People got used to having that, quote, free health care, and it doesn't matter that it's imploding or anything else. They still want it. Well, people have gotten used to having easy access to drugs, and it's ruining our country.
And the amount of heroin that's coming to where it's the same price as marijuana, I mean, that's supply and demand, and if people don't understand how much is coming into the country, they're living in a vacuum.
Well, I think a lot of people don't. We have quite a drug problem, and of course the opioid problem has gotten huge across the United States, and they're really not addressing that in Congress, in the states. I mean, there's just doesn't seem to be that addressing. We're going to lose a whole generation of people.
Sure.
And those that aren't involved and those that are involved are getting hurt by it.
Yeah. When I was reading a paper in the airport in Tucson, and there'd been 15 overdose deaths in Phoenix this month.
This month.
Just this, the month of June. And, that's unheard of.
Well, and the numbers in other parts of the country are so much huger, too.
Yeah.
So as we go to kind of wrap this up, Joe Beth, how you're feeling better about things. Now, your family and you have sons and everything that work on the ranch, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. How do you feel futuristically things are going to get? Because, this is fourth generation. We got fifth. We're going to have sixth generation. How are we feeling?
We have two grandsons.
That's right. How are you feeling about your grandsons? Are they out on the farm? Are the ranch, the ranch?
1 and 4 years old. So
oh, okay.
Not much.
Although
the 4-year old loves to follow John around.
Okay.
But
how do you feel about it?
I'm more optimistic now about, them taking over and being able to safely live on the ranch.
Yeah. It has to be something, though, that has been a big concern.
Oh, yes. Yes.
We've got to convince their wives.
I can't convince their wives. I don't remember the gentleman's name, Alligators in the Swamp.
Oh, Ed Ashurst.
Ed. Yes. Oh, my God. He told stories, and he was your, wasn't he a neighbor?
Yes, he
was a neighbor.
Close friend.
Yeah, and I just think about some of the things that he said and trying to track down somebody that killed somebody in his and living there.
Yeah.
And, locking your doors, not locking your doors, it doesn't really matter, does
right,
it?
Right, right. That's true.
So,
especially where he lives.
Yeah. So you are listening to WCRS. We're going to be wrapping this up in just a minute. John, is there anything else you'd like us to know before we wrap this up? It's always a pleasure to have you on the show every year.
Well, the feeling's mutual, and like I said, you're our voice, and FAIR is the best voice we have for speaking out on this issue. And my optimism is high with Trump, but I hope the Republicans can back him, and maybe the Democrats can come into it. But that's what's disgusting me right now is that.
Well, it's like this whole health care thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it just it makes you really wonder that why they didn't get get everybody on the same page before they went out and announced it,
right.
And then have these people working against them.
Yeah, and supposedly they've been working on it for 7 years.
Yeah.
I thought, wow.
That's it. That is really bad. You are listening to WCRS in Greenwood. Joe Beth, what are you, futuristically going forth? What are you thinking? Anything else that we should know that's from South Carolina to Washington, D.C.?
No, I think that's it. I really do hope Congress can work together and work with the president. It's kind of disheartening to think that they're
I think the thing that's so disheartening to me is the Democrats would never do that.
Yeah.
You know,
right,
they would back their president. I mean, you know, Nancy Pelosi, I mean, we all remember this line, well, we've got to pass it before we read
right.
it, you know, and yet they tear down anything that anybody else does. And, you know, we were talking with Dan Stein here, the president of it, and he said, you know, this type of thing is not healthy for our country. I mean,
right.
No,
we are on the verge here. And I think, when, like we said, nine Republicans coming out and saying, I can't. And then today on the news, they were talking about the mayors or governors in different states that are not supporting it. And it is disheartening because they've had 7 years. We're going to repeal it. We're going to repeal it. And gosh darn, you look at Paul Ryan and you go, where are you going with this, Paul?
Yeah. Well, and the same token, all these sanctuary cities now, at least, that, you know, I guess the positive thing is they've announced that we're a sanctuary city, but my God, it's pretty well divided in the big cities. I thought, Jesus, that I was surprised at the sanctuary city magnitude.
And the idea that, hell no, we're not going to give it up.
Right.
And you're not going to not deny us the money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That just boggles my mind that they.
Well,
you know, it's kind of like when all the illegals would go and protest. You know, hundreds and thousands of them waving the American flag and, you know,
Mexican
their little
flag.
Slogan, and it's like.
Here
like,
I
what?
Am.
Here
yeah.
I am, and you're not going to do anything about it. Yeah.
Greatest country in the world, but what are you going to do about it?
You know, we talked to Ari, the Border Patrol agent. I don't think I can say his last name this morning. And I said to him, I said, what's your nationality? What's your background? He goes, I'm Hispanic, but I'm an American.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's one of the things that we've lost. And,
sure.
You know, we used to all think of ourselves as Americans.
Right. No hyphenated, you know.
Exactly. And we all had our traditions. If we came from other countries, you
right.
had maybe a tradition at Christmas that you did or
yeah.
a special holiday. Okay, that was great. But you also supported and believed in America, and you were an American first if you went through what it took to become an American.
That's right.
One last topic. One of the guys I may interview tomorrow is a gentleman on pro-English. How do you guys feel about that, being a pro-English country? I mean, this is hard, but go ahead.
Well, you know, Arizona has passed English, you know, English only or English language, and it goes nowhere. It's like
a laugh. It's
yeah,
a farce,
it's,
isn't it?
Yeah. You know, your ballots, your driver's license tests, you know, it's like.
Well, I love getting stuff from the federal government that says, if you need to have it in Farsi, just call that number.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in favor of it, but the bottom line is that the schools and the federal government cater to people, and that doesn't allow them to assimilate.
Exactly.
Well, the
school, we don't force
our kids.
The schools
are bound by law to, you know,
have tutors and
translators, you know, teach English is the second language to students, you know, and the district I work for is close to Fort Huachuca, so they have quite a few different languages because, you know, servicemen will marry women from, you know, or servicewomen will marry men. I don't want to be, you know, and they speak all these different languages. But for the most part, you know, a lot of the kids will pick it up very quickly because a lot of the you know, it has to be the parents that want them to speak, you know.
Sure, exactly.
Want them to learn and make sure that they attend school regularly. And
well, a lot of our stores are in Spanish also. And
well, I think, I mean, it, to me, okay, here's what my position is on it. Personally, if a store wants to do things in English and Spanish because they have that type of business, so be it.
Right.
But our government, you should not be able to become a U.S. citizen with a translator sitting there translating for the question so you can get the answers.
I agree.
Right. Vietnamese should not be a possibility. If you can't speak English good enough to pass the test, then you shouldn't be a citizen. I'm sorry.
That's right. Yeah. I agree.
Well, and that the government has downplayed the privilege of being an American citizen.
Well, we've dummied it down.
Sure. And it, you know, the greatest country in the world, people are dying to get here, literally.
Yes.
And then they make this gesture. That you're right. If you don't know English and you don't want to be a citizen,
sure,
don't do it.
And I don't think anybody ever has a problem with somebody having a second or a third or a fourth
language. No,
it's great. Yes.
I wish I did, but
You should be able to speak it enough to be able to fill
out
a form and read it. Yes, exactly. Well, as always, it's such a pleasure to have you all here with us. What have you got? Were you going to get a tour of the White House?
We did.
You did?
Yeah.
Yes, we did.
And how was it?
No, we get it Friday.
Oh, that's Friday. Right.
Yes.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what we're doing Friday. We are so thrilled about this. I have found the head of the Library of Congress for the Veterans Oral History Program.
Oh, cool.
And at 8 o'clock on Friday morning, we are getting a private tour of parts of the Library of Congress and going to talk to Colonel Karen Lloyd about setting up some programs down there in Greenwood. So we are thrilled to be able to do this. Yeah.
I love the Library of Congress. It's a beautiful building.
I had never been, and you know, you see pictures, but we did a little video just saying videos, pictures, they just don't do it justice.
That's right.
You got to get there, you got to see it.
You bet. Oh, that's good for you.
Yeah, so we're really excited about it. Well, thank you so much, Joe Beth and John Ladd from Arizona. Thank you so much.
Have
a good one.
You too.
All right, this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Let's see, Andy, we need to take a little break here. We need more than just a couple of minutes. I guess we missed the news, but come up with something and I'll be back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're on the road. We are up here in Washington, D.C. today, and we have been having a great time. Many of you that are on Facebook with us will know that we were over at the Library of Congress today, taking it all in and getting prepped for our interview on Friday with Veterans Oral History Project. So we went over there and checked all that out. It was great. Let me just tell you this. We can do all the videos and all the pictures, and you can look at them all professionally done on YouTube or whatever. You can read books and check it all out and everything. But there is something very, very awe-inspiring about standing in the room where the statues or where the mosaics on the floor of the Library of Congress. Today, one of the demonstrations they were doing was pretty darn interesting. They were showing you how they actually did a mosaic. And actually, the artist would sketch it out on a piece of paper. It was called a cartoon, wasn't it, Emerald? A cartoon? And they sketch it all out, and then they end up cutting the pieces to fit it. I mean, it's a very elaborate process that they go through, but the very fact is that each, it was like a block, a square, would be done. That's one interesting thing. The other interesting I mean, there's lots of interesting, but a couple of little facts you probably didn't know. Did you know that the Library of Congress is actually a brick building? I didn't know that. The guy called it, you know what an Oreo is? Well, yes, we know what Oreos are. In the center was is the brick. On one side is the granite. On the other side is the marble. So totally amazing how these buildings were made, what they the artistry, the people that have been noted, the artists, the writers, the poets. I mean, it is just really, really a fantastic place. And although it might not be on your list when you come to Washington, D.C., you might say, well, I got to see the Lincoln Monument, I got to see this, I got to see that. You better put the Library of Congress on there as a place to see. I don't think Emerald or I thought that it was just like, okay, well, it'll be cool. But we had no idea.
The poet's name.
All of that. And then they actually have exhibits in the Library of Congress. I thought we'd have to go to the Smithsonian to see that, but no, we saw World War One, we saw pre-Columbian artifacts. I mean, just, yeah, what was it?
Early maps of
America. I mean, all of these things were on display at the Library of Congress. The other good thing is, although we didn't make the trek because we were pretty pooped because we walked there from the hotel, is we could have walked right over to the Congress, to the visitor center over there. So there is so much to do here. Really take the time to investigate it. But please, if you've not been to the Library of Congress, please make sure you put that on your to-do list because it is awesome. And Friday, we will have a private interview at the Library of Congress. So we're really looking forward to that. That'll be at 8 o'clock in the morning. Other things going on. I hope you've learned a lot today. I mean, I certainly have learned a lot. Dan Stein with FAIR, the president of FAIR, is just an awesome guy to talk to, and he really has the direction that he thinks things need to go, should go, to help all of us in our country. And isn't that really what we're talking about? We're talking about helping all of us in our country. We used to think of immigration just as the immigrants that came to, the migrant workers that came just to pick strawberries or peaches or whatever. It's gone way, way, way beyond that. And as he said, the levels of immigration that we are at right now each year, we could have 1 billion people in the United States of America. What do you think of that, Emerald? It's too many people. We can't take care of our own people if we're not. We've got to take care of our own people before we bring in more people. But we, And you know, and we were talking about that. The interstates are already way, way too crowded. So if you get pissed off because there's too many people every time we do things, you need to think about the fact of immigration. How many more people can we bring into this country? I thought it was very fascinating talking to Joe Beth and John Ladd about the fact that the parents come across the border to have anchor babies. These babies are now American citizens, and then they go back across the border and live in Mexico, but they come back across the border to go to school and get all the services and everything. But they're not living in our country in this aspect. They're not paying the taxes, and yet they're using the services. I also think some of the things that Dan was saying about the direction that our country could end up going if we're not careful here. We do need our Congress to get together on some things. We do need our senators to get together. The very fact that we do have 9 senators who are against the health care bill, that's not a problem. That's not a problem. But they should have worked that out before they presented it. To have one by one have these people come forth and say, I'm not for this. Why wasn't there this working together? As John said, they've had 7 years to work this out. And now, of course, nobody wants to give up health care because it is something. Had they been able to hold the line, maybe we wouldn't have been at this experimental, to see this, that this experiment was a bad experiment. Anyways, healthcare is another topic. Immigration is a huge one.
Today, Governor Haley was on the Hill. If we'd known that, we would have tried to get an interview with her. But on the other hand, I'd love to make a trip to New York and see Governor Haley, Ambassador Governor Haley, right up there at the United Nations, right? I don't know, Emerald. Would you go? Yeah, Emerald would go. That settles it. That settles it. For, another thing that we have given out several of our T-shirts, our First Amendment T-shirts. They've been very popular here, I might add, at Fair. And for those that don't know, yours truly was on the front page of Talkers Magazine here today, along with several other broadcasters here at Fair. So all around been a great day, just a great day. We are certainly looking forward to tomorrow. Tomorrow morning we will have Congressman Jeff Duncan here. We're going to also be talking, I think, to the guy who is on a group for pro-English. And we've got some other possibilities that we are lining up. I'm not going to spill the beans. But, you know, the thing I like about this, you don't have to book everything. You just have to kind of be available to go with the flow. So I hope you're going to go with the flow with us tomorrow right here on WCRS when we have a great day on this. I just was looking at some tweets here. Emma Dumain, who is a reporter for the Charleston Courier, said, overwhelming feedback they're hearing from voters in South Carolina. They say that people are very confused on the health care bill. They're very confused. Yes, they are. It says she says, in the past 24 hours, I've spoken to both Lindsey Graham and Senator Tim Scott on what they're hearing from constituents on the health bill. It's just one of those things that is just not making a whole lot of sense to everybody. So people are confused, really. We understand. We're confused. They were actually having a small riot, weren't they? At one of the offices, I don't remember who it was, that was up here in Washington on the health care bill. So these are the things that we're seeing over and over and over again. People are fed up. It is the responsibility of our country and our government to come together. I tell you another thing that I thought was very interesting and probably very, very true is that it would be better to have more congressional representatives and smaller districts because you cannot have the effect on the people that you represent if you're representing, what is it, 400,000 or some such number as that. So very thoughtful conversation with the president of FAIR, Diane Stein, and we'll be having all those interviews will be put up on the server, and I'm sure Emerald will be posting links on those on our Facebook page if you want to go and listen from there. I don't know. It's just been a great day, hasn't it? We've got a lot more work to do because tomorrow is the last day of FAIR, so we'll be lining up some interviews. Hope you're going to stay tuned with us and be part of it. We'll get our other set of ranchers are here. I'm sure we'll have a sheriff or two on with us. We haven't talked to a sheriff. And so that's what we're doing, just having a good time. We got a little party to go to tonight. Emerald, are you up for the party? She's up for party. Okay, this is part of FAIR. We are staying at the fabulous Phoenix Park Hotel, which is right across the street from Union Station. If we walk out the door, you can see the Capitol building. It's just a great location, and we really want to thank FAIR for being so accommodating and working with us, and the very fact that Ann Eller from Greenwood, South Carolina, is here at FAIR, I think is pretty awesome and pretty much of a statement on what people think of what we do, not only in Greenwood, but in this country. Thank you, everybody. I think I'm going to sign out and go get ready for a little party, but you be ready for tomorrow because I'll be ready. Looking forward to talking to you. Don't forget to check out our Facebook page.
WCRS.AM radio. Lots of great content there. We've also been tweeting all day. Lots of Emerald has been putting out lots of tweets here today, so check those out, WCRS radio. And if you're not going to be near the radio and you want to hear what's going on 8 to 10 and 4 to 6 tomorrow, then just download our free app, WCRS Radio. You know, you hear us on 98.5 and 1450 AM. And now a little shout out to Sharp Facets back there in Greenwood. I'm in Washington. Now is the time to go to Sharp Facets because Jeff says he's going to sell it. He's just going to sell it. So he's going to be making deals. It's your opportunity to go buy, buy, buy at Sharp Facets Gallery. If there's been things you've been looking at, check out our website, sharpfacetsgallery.com. Check that out and go for it. It's fine. Just go in there and see if he'll make you a deal. He's already told me I can't look at the books when I come back. I'm not to know what he sold things for. So what are you waiting for? Get there to Sharp Facets Gallery. We do have, in all seriousness, we do have a lot of furniture pieces we do not want to move. There's a lot of great oriental cabinets that we will not move. And glass, oriental, some showcases are part of it too. Some small furniture pieces we won't be moving. So if you'd like to buy them, go see them at Sharp Facets Gallery on the 72 bypass, at least for another couple of weeks, between South State Bank and Burger King. That's going to do it for me. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.
MUSE, but he did.